Now, get ready to spend the next 2 hours with our three sports-loving ladies, Mia O'Brien, Lauren Brooks, and Taylor Dahl.
This is Helmets and Heels
on 1010XL, switched on by First Coast Lighting and Fans. Upscale lighting, fans, and home decor. Show me what you got, pretty lady.
Welcome into a big Chief Tire Monday here on Helmets and Heels. If you need anything in the world of automotive, make sure you go see our friends at Big Chief Tire. 5 locations around town. Visit BigChiefTire.com for more information. And I have a feeling, Taylor, that you and I will be there tomorrow.
Yes, I was just about to say thank you, Big Chief, because my air conditioner in my car is going out, and this is that worst time for it to possibly
happen. Literal worst time. The humidity has now arrived.
Yeah, so thank you, Big Chief. I will be there in the morning to hopefully fix this AC in my car.
Yes, because I have been in a car that didn't have AC in the summertime. And yes, you can roll the windows down and get a little bit of...
Hardly.
Yeah, a little bit of relief, but right, you are just plain sweating.
Yeah.
All right, let's get to some Jaguars talk. And I'm going to say right up front, I stole this question fair and square from The Drill. I think Dan does a great job with his Dreamfinders Homes poll questions every day. And so I really liked this question because I really think we could each have a completely different answer as far as, in the end, who will be the Jaguars' best offseason acquisition. He gave 4 choices. You can pick something else, but Brian Thomas Jr., Eric Armstead, Mitch Morris, as far as players are concerned, or defensive coordinator Ryan Nielsen. Mia, I'll start with you. Who is your answer?
My answer is Ryan Nielsen, just because I expect... In terms of, I know what I'm going to get, and I don't think Ryan Nielsen, knock on every piece of wood you can find, you know, heaven forbid, those other players may suffer injuries, there may be other things at play. I think we can bank on Ryan Nielsen for 17 games, at least that's the hope, right? Correct me if I'm wrong. I think we're safe in saying that.
Well, hopefully more than 17 games, but yes.
Exactly, well said. Well said, Lauren.
It was fun to see the pictures of the stash out there at OTAs, which is, of course, Ryan Nielsen's mustache.
Yes, and I think that maybe it's me viewing this question through the lens of what I've been told by our contemporaries in Atlanta, who, from people who work in that building, people who work on staff I've spoken to, people who cover the Atlanta Falcons, they were heartbroken when Ryan Nielsen left, not for a head coaching job, of which so many of them have said to me he will be a head coach in the National Football League in the next 5 years, but because he left for a defensive coordinator position and was able to walk scotch-free because of a new regime change coming in. And so maybe I'm just going off of what I've been told from the folks up there. I'm sure there's contemporaries in New Orleans that, you know, may beg to differ, but I've heard from a lot of them that were big fans of Ryan Nielsen when he was there. And so, yes, for me, I think that that will be the biggest difference. And I think if what I've reported and what so many of us here at 1010 have been told and have reported is true, this defense has talent. And with no disrespect to the previous coaching staff, if only, especially in the home stretch of the season last year, if those players were coached properly, told where to be, had communication between different position groups, and were able to come together and know where they're supposed to be in a critical game, week 18 in Nashville, I feel like we are talking about the Jaguars in a completely different light on May 6, 2024 than we are today.
Yeah, what's your answer, Taylor?
Yeah, it's interesting to me, just going off of what Mia said, because I even remember, like, when the defensive side of the ball was fired, a lot of people were like, what? Like, why wasn't Press Taylor the one fired? I feel like our offense was the one that had issues all season. And I know there was injuries involved in that, but I've talked a lot about how I thought the defense saved the offense a lot in the first half of the season. So I still was kind of, I get there was a bit of a drop off late, but I think that they were doing so much throughout the season that at the end things kind of just collapsed. I do think Ryan Nielsen will help everything that we've heard. Obviously, he's a fantastic coach, so I am excited to see that. But I do think that the defense was kind of already there, and some pieces added will definitely even help him look better. But so for me, the way the poll question was worded too is like, in the end, who's going to be the best? So I'm more so thinking not just in one season and multiple seasons when we're talking about who at the end of, not saying, obviously not the end of the Jaguars, but the end of when maybe these guys are gone and we're done talking about them, who are we going to look back and say, that's where my mind went.
Okay.
So I more so am thinking Brian Thomas, because I just think that with someone like this, he's obviously a young player, so he's going to hopefully be here longer, and we have a lot more. I mentioned last week about how I do think he'll have a little more development to get done, so it'll maybe in a couple years we're seeing the Brian Thomas that we'll have for the future. So that's where my mind went more, is I think that he's going to be here longer. I think he's going to be a big part of this offense for a while, and him and Trevor now have the opportunity to develop together through all of these years coming up. So to me, I'm going Brian Thomas, just because I do think he's going to be a part of this offense that we're going to be talking about for a while.
And it's funny, when I first when I first read the question this morning and heard them discussing it, my immediate answer was Ryan Nielsen, because I think, to me, his point as far as players can get injured, sure, but I think it's more he has such a stamp now on this defense, and I do think that the previous staff didn't utilize the talent that they had in the right way, and I think changing the defensive scheme is going to be huge for them, and really be able to allow Josh Allen and Trayvon Walker and whoever else they want to pass rush get after the quarterback. But I also could have gone Brian Thomas Jr., because I do think Trevor Lawrence hasn't had a weapon like him yet, and I think he's going to be incredibly important. But in the end, I will go with, just to be different, I'll go with Eric Armstead, because as good as Ryan Nielsen I think is going to be, this team has not had a player like Eric Armstead in many years. And whether you want to compare him to Calais or you want to compare him to Marcell Dareus, as far as what he can do for that defensive front, he is going to clog the middle, and he's going to get after the quarterback. And so, yes, while you have Josh and Trayvon and maybe Travis Gibson as well there as pass rushers, you also need an interior pass rush. And that's one thing that a year ago I wondered, what is this going to look like for the Jags? Mm-hmm. How are they going to get an interior pass rush?
Before or after?
The answer was they didn't.
Devon Hamilton and the illness.
After the illness.
Okay.
Yeah, I was confident with Roy Robertson-Harris and Devon Hamilton. Maybe not as confident with Fadakasi, but I thought, well, he played this season, that prior season, with the calf injury, so if he's fully healthy. But then once Devon had the illness, it was like, well, I really don't understand where this pass rush is going to come from in the interior. And yes, the two outside guys did as much as they certainly could, but I don't know that they'll necessarily get 27.5 sacks against, but you've got to get that interior pass rush.
And again, I want to speak to, I understand it was like the talking point on the Superstation across all programs last week, the reason they drafted Mason Smith, the reason they drafted Jordan Jefferson, the reason they drafted Miles Cole, is because so many of you clamored last season for the lack of depth along the defensive line. There were also a good portion of the listening fan base that noted that perhaps the personnel last year was better suited for a 4-3.
Mm-hmm.
They have now done that. They have moved to a predominantly 4-3, although they will be multiple under Ryan Nielsen, and I firmly believe that. They have fortified that defensive line to the point that if Devon Hamilton was to go down again, if Roy Robertson-Harris is to go down, there is not only proven depth below them on the depth chart, but there is also young, exciting developmental projects that aren't just sixth or seventh round picks that you're throwing a dart at below right. them on the depth chart, which says that you're also keeping an eye to the future and you're saying, yes, we are going to get tougher in the trenches. Yes, I understand so many of you thought when Trent Baalke said that would mean revamping the offensive line, but he actually meant revamping the defensive line. And real quick, I just want to make the point again for those who may be new to Helmets and Heels, or maybe, you know, you're just hopping in your car for the first time, you're unfamiliar with what we're saying when we say that the change to Ryan Nielsen and his coaching staff, in my opinion, with the personnel that was already here, will pay off dividends. Again, I go back to what I was told by a source in February. Ryan Nielsen arrived in the building and he asked a player, how much time did you spend talking about alignments? And the player laughed and said 0% of the time.
Oof.
And then come to find out that in terms of conversations between certain position groups and those rooms with other position groups along the defensive front and there and those rooms, there was zero to no communication the last 5 weeks of the season. And that can't happen. Again, the word alignment comes into play, but also physically, literally on the field in terms of scheme as well.
That it's just so interesting to me, too. Like, I'm just wondering where Doug was, because
he was supposed to be babysitting, and that's, you know.
Like, have conversations, because we said the same thing about press in certain moments when we were like, why was he still play calling? And it just let it happen, and then you're letting your coaches not even have conversations with the guys. Like, that's not the kind of, like, full-on leadership that I really like. So hopefully things start changing, because that's honestly a little scary to hear.
And if you look at the overall rankings from last season, the Jags' offense was about middle of the pack, which I think would surprise a lot of people, because I feel like the lack of production late certainly really, and of course Trevor's injury really hurt this team. But the defense was actually, when you look at power rankings or even stats, towards the bottom. Mm-hmm. So both sides of the ball certainly need to be fixed. And the other player that I think we all could have said may help this offense tremendously is Mitch Morse, the center. The relationship that he and Trevor will have to form in order to get the same relationship that he had with Luke Fortner, the communication and all that, but he's going to, Mitch is then going to take the offense to hopefully be able to run the football.
Yeah.
And that does take pressure off your quarterback. So I really think all four are incredibly important acquisitions.
Yes. I just, again, maybe I'm buying more into that belief that the personnel was here and now they've fortified it further with the signing of Eric Armstead, addressing the defensive side of the ball with what, all but two draft picks this, or three, I guess, if you want to count Keelan Robinson, who's more, or four, and then Cam Little. So what, it's like five of their nine draft picks were on the defensive side of the ball 2 weeks ago. It says to me that, like, they've recognized that they didn't need to overhaul the defense, but there were things that needed to be fine-tuned. And you can make the same argument, again, to the Mitch Morse signing. They're fine-tuning the offensive line, Doug's company line of, we didn't have the offensive line we wanted until week 17 or week 18. Doesn't make sense because Ezra Cleveland wasn't on the team to start the year, so I don't really know how you could say that. But, hey, to each his own. I think that, yes, for me, the offense, so long as the offense can get out of its own way, I think it will solve itself. The defense, it needs someone who's going to be more hands-on. And to your point, Taylor, Doug said, the reason I'm handing the keys to the offense to Press Taylor is because I need to be focused on more on the defensive side of the ball, which, again, let's go back a year ago. When he said that, did anybody, like, kind of look around and be like, why does he need to be, like, involved in the entire operation? You just went to the divisional round of the play. Like, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. So, again, that's where you know there were things going on behind the scenes. And I'm not going to tell anybody how to do their job, but, you know, and I go back to in December, to your point of, like, should we have seen more leadership from Doug? I go back to, there were players that were like, yeah, Doug's got us, like, working on tackling and stuff like that. And it's like, well
good.
Well, someone's got to coach you. Yeah. Like, someone's got to be the coach. So, like, here he is. He's trying, but,
That just seems so fundamental and elementary, tackling. Yeah. Like, it doesn't seem like you should
Although
still
Coach Campo has said, when things aren't going well, that's what you should go to.
And in week 14, 15, you're just now noticing that these guys aren't getting the coaching they're needing. It's wild and it's scary. So hopefully all of that is kind of shifting with Ryan Nielsen, because I think that when we look at offensive and but even defensively, when you go through and we can talk about how many times did the offense give up the ball last year, and then the defense is running right back on the field. So we can play this game back and forth of whose fault it was and who was worse and who was better, who had more issues, because I think we can make the argument for both sides.
Yes, unfortunately. And you could even really also throw special teams in there. Yeah. Punting was fine, but kicking, obviously, with Brandon McManus down the stretch also didn't go according to plan. And so, yeah, there were issues everywhere. All right, we have a loaded show today. We have three guests joining us, the first of which is Trevor Sikkema from PFF. Let's say hello to him now.
Let's ring up another guest on the All-Pro Roofing phone line.
I feel like I properly prepared for this first guest on this Monday edition of Helmets and Heels, because I did listen to last week's episode of the NFL Draft Stock Exchange, which, of course, you get weekly with Trevor Sikkema, Connor Rogers, our friend joining us now from Charlotte, I believe. Yes, Trevor, are you in Charlotte on the All Pro Roofing Hotline? How are you, sir?
This is true. I am from Charlotte currently. I appreciate you guys having me on the show. I'm excited to talk a little NFL draft with you guys.
Absolutely. Let's pick up right where I just left off with your podcast episode last week. You guys went through all 32 of the league's teams, graded their draft haul. Jags, I believe both of you gave them a C+. However, as much as maybe some people are, you know, driving around in their car right now and they hear C+ and they say, "Why?" You did note, Trevor, you believe the Jags had the second best draft class in the AFC South. Why?
Yeah, so look, I think that there is certainly a high ceiling with what the Jags did. I don't hate the players that they drafted. It's just a little bit of a different way that I would have went about things with certain players. Now, of course, like, Trent Baalke seems to have a type, so I feel like it was a very Baalke draft in a lot of ways, starting with Brian Thomas Jr. with the 23rd overall pick. I do want to say that them trading back from 17 to 23 to still get their guy, really great move from him. So I want to tip my cap there. You get some extra draft capital. You get the player that you probably wanted all along. And I can say that pretty confidently because, well, it felt like it was either Brian Thomas Jr., maybe A.D. Mitchell, or one of the top two corners that could have been on the board. Well, Terrion Arnold was still there. Quinion Mitchell just went the pick before, but they still end up going wide receiver. So that was the guy that they kind of wanted all along. The Mason Smith selection, look, obviously you guys have probably talked about it a ton. Ceiling is through the roof. former five-star defensive tackle, played pretty well as a freshman, tore his ACL his sophomore year. Junior year, you could tell he's just still getting confident from that knee injury. He just hasn't played a lot of football, and there's a long way to go for him to be an effective pro. But, of course, the ceiling is there. It's just way higher than I would have drafted him, given what we've seen from him on the field. Jerrion Jones, their third-round pick, this is a player that I really liked in the draft class. But the reason why that this isn't something that really helps the Jags draft grade for me is Jerrion kind of struggled as an outside CB during his college career. But he was really good in the slot. He was an elite in the slot. He had an elite coverage grade this past year. Saw that at the Shrine Bowl as well. Really good slot defender. But I feel like the Jags have those slot options. I wanted them to get another outside cornerback opposite Tyson Campbell. And so that was really – it wasn't just the fact like, oh, CB is a need for them. It was, to me, a specific type of CB that I wanted to see from them there. So I like the first-round pick. I think the second-round pick was a reach. I wonder if Jerrion is the type of corner that they really needed at the time in the third round. So – those three picks obviously go a long way into the draft grade itself, and that's why I ended up coming away with a C-plus for the Jags.
Yeah, Trevor, when you're talking about, because you mentioned the Mason Smith pick, and I know a lot of people's criticisms were more so not the position itself, but that there were guys like Chris Jenkins and Michael Hall still on the board at that point, and that everybody kind of knew that he has a good amount of developmental things that still have to go on for him to, like you just said, be effective in the NFL. So were you surprised that they went that route rather than maybe some of those other guys sitting there, or were you surprised that they went that position group at all in general?
No, I'm not surprised that they went the position group at all. I figured that this would be something that they would take a look at. And, you know, it's a little bit of a two-sided question, right? Because I think if you're asking, am I surprised that Mason Smith went in the second round over some of those guys that you mentioned? Yes, I definitely am surprised that that was the case. Am I surprised that Balky, given his draft history and the types of players that he gravitates towards, am I surprised that it was the Jags who ended up taking the chance drafting him a little bit earlier than I thought he was going to? No, that one I kind of looked at him when the pick came across the wire when we were doing our draft show. I kind of chuckled a little bit. I was like, of course. Like,
Balky
of course
pick.
It was Balky who ended up being the one who wanted to be early on Mason Smith and not want to wait to get him in round three, because there was a chance that he could have been gone before they came on the clock at 96 in the third round. So there's no guarantee that he would have been there. But yeah, it's just kind of like you said, this is a high ceiling player. You just have to understand, like, this is a big time development pick. Like, there are still things that he's got to get better at. And I think first and foremost, he's just got to keep getting more and more confident in that knee, because the explosiveness from him is really what he bases everything around. We saw that his freshman year, the times that you saw his freshman tape really light up and have those flashes, it was like, man, this is a massive interior defensive lineman who really can get off the ball very quickly, powerfully, knows how to stack and shed, can shoot gaps in the passing game to get in the backfield, all of this stuff. We just didn't see it as much. We needed to see more anticipation from him, but we still need to see that. Now we just need to see that explosiveness come back. So a lot of things that he can do at the NFL level, it's just, to me, going to take some time.
Trevor Sikkema, PFF lead draft analyst and co-host of the NFL Stock Exchange podcast. Trevor, you are making, I think, a lot of Jaguars fans happy when you tweeted this out. Trevor Lawrence might throw for 5,000 yards next year. That was, of course, right after the Jaguars did add Brian Thomas Jr. Why did you tweet that and make so many Jags fans excited?
Yeah, so it's not just the Brian Thomas Jr. edition, although that is part of it, right? After night one of the draft, I kind of looked at the picks that were, and I was like, man, you look at what they did in free agency as well. Okay, now Calvin Ridley is gone, but they replaced him with Gabe Davis. What's Gabe Davis do well? He's a big-time vertical threat. That's when he was as best, when he was in Buffalo. Okay, now you go out and your first-round pick, you draft Brian Thomas Jr., who was top three in basically every single category when it came to being a deep threat receiver in college football over the last couple of years. So I said to myself, I was like, wow, I guess the Jags are really going to open it up this year. And then I did some more research on it. I didn't realize how much they were opening it up last year. I mean, they were top 10, if not top five, in when you look at just throws of 20 or more yards down the field. They were top 10, if not top five, in total yards, total attempts, big time throws in which they were first, completion percentage. And so to me, this speaks to, okay, they already wanted to go this direction. They already wanted to really open things up and push the ball down the field vertically. And now they have two good passing weapons to do it, who that is part of their strength as receivers. So to me, it just spoke to, okay, Lawrence has had a couple of 4,000-yard passing seasons, but now with these two guys as the main wide receivers on the roster, I think it's only going to open things up more and more for them to continue to get even more focused on that vertical passing attack. And so I think if fully healthy year from Trevor Lawrence, fully healthy year for a lot of these guys in the offense, I think we can get close to, if not over, 5,000 yards from T-Law.
Which I'd be remiss if I didn't mention that Trevor's co-host on the NFL Stock Exchange, Connor Rogers, accurately predicted that the Jaguars would draft Brian Thomas Jr. at the NFL Combine on the 1010XL social channels. So shout out to Connor for nailing that one. And of course, shout out to Trevor, who is joining us on the All Pro Roofing Hotline. And you can find him on X at Tampa Bay Trey. Let's get to the day three selections that the Jaguars made, Trevor. I know that you noted this on your podcast, and I was cackling as I'm on an airplane last night when you said that you would have bet your 401k, your life pension, your entire life savings, everything that you own, on the Jaguars being the team to draft Miles Cole in the seventh round. Why is that? And give us maybe some other day three picks from the Jags that you enjoyed.
Yes, because Miles Cole is basically day three version of Trayvon Walker. And we saw the Jags obviously take Trayvon Walker at number one overall a couple of years ago over some really, really good prospects who maybe would have been more sure things if we're allowed to use that word when talking about the NFL draft. And Balky still was like, no. Trayvon Walker is a crazy, just unique athlete. We got to take him and we got to take the wild swing. Well, that's what Mason Cole is. Now, Mason Cole is different, right? Because he's not like a true junior like Trayvon Walker was. And there's not this crazy potential at a young age, okay? Cole is older. He was a sixth-year player. He really had yet to break out in college football at all. But he's 6'6", 280 pounds, and he is just this crazy freak athlete. I watched him, and I was like, look, I would absolutely take the chance on this guy on day three. I would have drafted Miles Cole in, like, the fourth or fifth round. I understand that the production hasn't been there for him, and that matters, but man, it feels like what this guy is capable of, even if it's only in flashes, is something that's really tough to defend. So, like I said, older prospect, has been in college a while, has had those opportunities to break out and just hasn't. So he's probably not going to be a major consistent difference maker at the NFL level, but somebody who you could put into a defensive line rotation who might be able to get you a handful of splash plays every year that means a lot. I think, again, it's just kind of like a Trent Baalke type. That's why I laughed when ended up being the selection for them at 236. But yeah, I mean, some of their other day three picks, I really like Jordan Jefferson and Javon Foster. These are, to me, two rock solid players. I think Jordan Jefferson is a really nice nose tackle, or I should just say like interior defensive line type that can hold the line of scrimmage. He's a little bit lighter, but he's pound for pound, I think, really strong. Good defensive rotation type of a dude, especially as a run stuffer. And then I like the Javon Foster pick as well, because Foster is a really experienced offensive tackle in the SEC. Now, he might not be athletic enough to, okay, like, we got to get this guy a starting role right away, but that experience and that success, I should say, because he also graded out very well for us in all 3 years that he started, that means a lot, because if either of the starting two offensive tackles for Jacksonville go down, well, you have somebody in reserve who you're not afraid to put out there because he's got so much in-game experience. It's not like you're going to put this guy out there and he's some developmental young offensive tackle who's going to be looking up at the bright lights. Like, Javon Foster's going to get in the game. He's going to be like, all right, this is just what I do. Like, I've done this so many times throughout my college career in the SEC against some really good edge rushers. So to me, I really like that depth addition. And who knows, maybe one day Foster could obviously get a crack at one of those full-time starting jobs, because I think he's been super steady to be able to do so, but not quite the athlete you're always going to gravitate towards at the tackle level or at the tackle position at the NFL level, but a really good depth player to have. So those are, I know it's easy because those are the early day three picks, but those are the ones where I could see those guys playing pivotal roles for this team.
Well, Trevor, before we let you go, when you zoomed out AFC South, what were some of your favorite and least favorite that Tennessee, Indy, and Houston did for the draft?
Yeah, I mean, it's a really strong draft, I think, by Houston just overall. I think it's just more talent to add to it. I think that they're putting their foot on the gas pedal to get a lot better. Obviously, Indianapolis, I think, had a really good draft. They got my favorite pass rusher in the draft in Laiatu with their first pick. They got A.D. Mitchell. To me, at 52, is a massive steal to get a player like A.D. Mitchell to round out that wide receiver room. And so a massive gem there for Chris Ballard and that organization that could really pay off for him. So I think that is huge. Tennessee, look, I think that Tennessee, it took a big swing of the bat with their first two selections, drafting J.C. Latham in the top 10 and then drafting Tavondre Sweat in the second round. Those are players who could have big return on investments, but they're also somewhat risky, right? I mean, you're talking about, okay, is J.C. Latham a good enough pass protector to really be able to be a major difference maker? We know what he can do in the run game. And then Tavondre Sweat, I mean, a lot of questions, you know, with him getting a DUI a couple of weekends before the draft. And then also, you know, like just conditioning overall, what weight is he going to play at? Can you get a lot of snaps out of him during the year? If those two guys pan out, obviously they're cornerstones in the trenches on each side of the ball for Tennessee. But if they don't, man, that's gonna set that franchise's timeline back a little bit there. So a risky draft for the Tennessee Titans, a really solid one, I think, for the Indianapolis Colts. And then I would say the same thing, just business as usual, it feels like, for the Houston Texans.
All right, Trevor, well, we really appreciate all of your insight. And I have a feeling you enjoyed SportsCenter this past weekend more than normal.
You know, it was, I'll say, my favorite SportsCenter episode that I've ever watched. And that is all I will say about that.
The fact that we had both of you on within a week span. I mean, did we get a trophy or something? I don't think any other program in the nation had the first couple of sports media within a 5-day span on their air.
I think that's true. I think that you guys are the only – she mentioned that she had went on last week with you guys, and obviously she used to work in Jacksonville, so she was telling me about that. But I think you are right. I think you guys are the first outlet to be able to do it. So somebody should get you a trophy somewhere.
Love it. Thank you so much, Trevor.
Appreciate it, guys. Anytime.
All right, there he goes, Trevor Sikkema. He is the PFF lead draft analyst and co-host of the NFL Stock Exchange podcast. In case you missed it, we had Alyssa Lang on last week, and the two of them are engaged, and she was on SportsCenter this past weekend. It was so fun to see, but she didn't tell us that was going to happen.
Yeah, I think it was like a last-second call to the bullpen and called her up from the minors. And not that the SEC network is the minors, but it's within the Disney
right,
farm
umbrella
system, and said, hey, would you want to come on up and do a couple days in Bristol? So, yeah, it was a lot of fun to watch Alyssa.
It sure was. What are the top 10 games of the NFL season? We'll dive into that next on a Big Chief Tire Monday on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Big Chief Tire Monday on Helmets and Heels.
This is Helmets and Heels.
Kept classy by First Coast Lighting and Fans. Upscale lighting, fans, and home decor.
On 1010XL.
Little Luke Combs for you. He performed over the weekend here in Jacksonville, Friday night and Saturday night at Everbank Stadium. And everyone that I know that went had an absolute blast. That would include me. He, of course, always does a great job. I think this is my fourth time seeing him in four different places, which is kind of fun.
That is.
Awesome. And for people that I know that went for the very first time that absolutely love him, they, of course, were like, he is such a great performer.
Yes. Did he play Where the Wild Things Are?
He did.
Yes. Okay. Good. I'm glad.
He played, and he also played, so I always like to ask people, like, what's your favorite? And so one of the friends that went, her favorite is actually the cover of Ed Sheeran's song Dive.
Oh, yeah.
And he played that.
Oh, he did?
He did, yeah.
Sweet.
So it was all great.
Did you guys see the tweet that was circulating? There was an individual, it looks like a Jaguars fan, who was planning on proposing during a certain song.
I saw that a couple did get engaged.
Okay, so they did. Okay.
Yeah.
So, and this was for the Saturday show.
Yes.
But then there was a specific song. He wanted Five Leaf Clover to be the fan vote.
He did not play that.
He didn't, and it was taken off of the options you could vote on. So then, like, I saw a tweet later in the day Saturday. It was like, just kidding. That's no longer an option. If we could get one of these two, like, that works too, team. Like, I'm out here just on a mission. So if you're listening right now, driving around your car, and you are that individual, a round of applause, RJ, because hopefully it's a round of applause that the engagement went off without a hitch.
It looked like it did. All right, let's get it to the NFL, the top 10 games of the season.
Well, before we do that, Lauren, do we want to make this of that? Because I see plenty of folks, and including RJ, wanting to bring it to our attention, a little bit of news within the AFC South.
That just Happened. Brought to you by Florida Home AC, the official air conditioning partner of the Jacksonville Jaguars.
So he's not signing. It's just a visit as of right now. But yes, now former Jaguars wide receiver Zay Jones visiting with the Tennessee Titans today. The obvious connection, of course, is new Titans OC Nick Holes, who also reportedly was a big reason why Calvin Ridley ultimately signed with those hated Titans.
Boo.
Well, I think they figured out that Calvin Ridley needs some help as far as lining up, and Zay Jones was helpful here in Jacksonville, so he may be able to help him up there in Nashville.
It's funny you should say that, Lauren.
And give Will Levis as much help as possible. Probably in their mind.
It's funny you should say that because a fan apparently just tweeted exactly that at Calvin Ridley, to which Calvin Ridley replied, "I'ma have me a son. We gon' remember you if y'all make it."
Excuse me?
There you have it.
Hold on. He said what to Calvin? That he needs help lining up?
He literally said, you know Calvin needs Zay to know where to line up. So,
I mean, that has been...
He's not wrong.
Yeah, that has been, I feel like, somewhat of a fact over the past
few
months.
Know what that means. If someone can decipher it for us, 641-1010 is the number to get involved in the conversation on Helmets and Heels.
All right, so for the top 10 games of the NFL season, Kevin Petro of NFL.com has this list. And I have to tell you, I think his second choice should actually be the best game. But spoiler alert, there are no Jaguars games in this list. So we'll each pick a Jags game that we're looking the most forward to. He's got Ravens against the Steelers. I get the whole Russell Wilson thing, and I get Justin Fields potentially if he ends up being the starter. I'm just throwing that game out because to me, the best game is what he has as the second one. Chiefs at 49ers. It's the Super Bowl rematch. Mm-hmm. Of course, that's the best game.
Yeah, I agree. And I think you would, almost anybody else would put that at the top of their list if you're not talking about like your teams.
Exactly. Tenor,
you know, you always want to throw some of your teams
in
there.
Your team
is on there.
Is
but
very high on this list, Taylor. Yes. Tell us what number three is.
Yeah, so Bears, Packers. I get it. The Bears haven't beat the Packers since 2018. And now it's, you know, Caleb Williams with this offense with Keenan and Rome and DJ and Cole Kmet and DeAndre Swift against Jordan Love, who had a really good end of his season or even second half of his season last year. So it's one of those things where, number one, it's just a rivalry that's the oldest. It's been around since the 1920s, and it hasn't been a whole lot of in favor of the Bears. So I feel like when it comes to this, it's always going to be probably on a list because they know there's just like an extra tension between that. But I think also like the fact that with Caleb Williams versus is Jordan Love going to continue on what Jordan Love was last year? Can Bears break the streak? Are the Packers just going to keep doing it? So when I was scrolling, I was like, it's going to be on here somewhere.
But see, that must be nice to at least have a rivalry game.
No, it's
game.
So stressful.
It is stressful, but it's nice that at least your team gets more of the primetime games.
Yeah.
Not that fans always love primetime. Some fans do, some fans don't.
And I get it.
Way.
People also, the last every year, are like, why do the Bears get so many? They've sucked. And I'm like, I get it. Like, I don't want them. Like, I truly hate primetime games. Number one, it's too late. I'm tired most of the time to stay up that late. It's stressful. Everybody's watching. So people watch your one primetime game and think they know what your team is.
Yep.
Drives me insane. So I hate having primetime games personally. Maybe it'll change if they start winning again.
Right.
Like, because obviously it's a little more fun when you win in primetime. I remember when they beat the Patriots not last year, but the year before on Monday Night Football or Thursday Night Football, one of them. And it was like this big thing because Justin Fields went off and everything looked good. And we thought that was like the turning point of everything. And so that was great. And so when you have those moments, it's great. But when you come into work the next day and you lose by 20, it's not as fun.
I can't help but look through this list with all due respect to the folks at NFL.com and feel like some of it is influenced by the NFL draft. Certainly, yes, Caleb Williams, whoever the number one overall pick is, which 9 times out of 10 tends to be a quarterback in the 21st century, I think you're going to see that team featured at least once.
Yeah.
But the fact that we're also seeing the Commanders versus the Cowboys as one of the top 10 games we want to watch this year, like, yeah, hey, listen, Jaden Daniels, electric, Heisman Trophy winner. I get that, but as much as that's a rivalry game, for that to be a top 10 game to watch.
No, I'd throw that one out.
Yeah, I'd throw that one out. And I think that, honestly, part of why we're seeing the Steelers as the number one game is just because everyone, including our text line Design My Lifetime Enclosures, is so enamored with their NFL draft class and the fact that they took 3 offensive linemen in their first 5 picks. And everyone's just like, oh, my God, the Steelers nailed the draft. Yeah. And so, therefore, we can't wait to watch them. Yes, I love Troy Fatanu as much as anybody. But to say that I'm most excited to watch Troy Fatanu go up against the Ravens defensive line, that's a big stretch.
And I do think that the new quarterback factor is a lot of it. Because I remember going back to Trevor's first year and everyone was like, Trevor versus Zach Wilson in December, this is going to be a game to watch. And because it's a two new quarterbacks, so you're always going to get those on these lists. And it's
and
like,
it wasn't Zach that game.
No, it wasn't.
Hurt, yeah. So it was all the
it ended up not even being that.
Yeah, and that's certainly part of it. The fourth game on the list, 49ers at Dolphins. I think that's a great game, but I wouldn't put that in my top 10. Now, number five, I would absolutely put in my top 10. That would be the Ravens at the Chargers. And in case you're just now realizing who the head coach of the Chargers is, that would be brother in the Harbaugh brothers. And so that one, that was
also
going to be a lot of fun.
Also, it's Lamar Jackson v. Justin Herbert.
Sure.
Like, that makes sense to me. They're two top 10 quarterbacks. Yeah. Like, yes, that should be on this list.
And Derrick Henry now with the Ravens. Mm-hmm. And obviously, like you said, people also like the Chargers draft as well. The sixth game on the list, Bills at Texans, because it's the Stephon Diggs game where he plays his former team. Mm-hmm. I get that. And, of course, people are enamored with CJ Stroud.
Yeah.
Look, I would have that game probably on my top 10 as well. The seventh one is the one Mia already talked about that we're throwing out, Commanders at Cowboys. Bleh.
Although one of our Heligans just texted in, and thank you for this, that perhaps it's the Dan Quinn revenge game. Like, that's the thought, which is still a reach for me.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose.
But I wouldn't put that in the top 10.
Yeah, I wouldn't either.
Yeah.
Their main thing is Jaden Daniels versus their rival and division rival. And it's like, we don't care about that right now.
Also,
yet.
Nobody thinks the Commanders are any good whatsoever. at least not yet. The Falcons at the Vikings, that's the eighth game on the list. Love that because, of course, the Kirk Cousins, again, facing his former team. That one will be fun. And, you know, what exactly does the Falcons offense look like? Mm-hmm. We don't, of course, know exactly when this game will be played.
Yeah. But is then another new quarterback with McCarthy.
Exactly.
Is he going to be playing?
Yep. Is Penix going to be playing for the Falcons? And again, of course, we find out more on dates, hopefully later this week.
Because that's the thing with this list, too, is obviously we don't have the schedule yet.
Correct.
So some of these you could say would be more interesting later in the season. Like this one, to me, like a Falcons-Vikings later, once we kind of see where the quarterback path is like. But if it's like week one and it's Sam Darnold versus Kirk Cousins, I'm not sure that's as exciting as a potential Michael Penix versus J.J. McCarthy.
Yeah, totally agree. And rounding out the list, the Lions at the Texans are ninth. They like both of those teams because they're ascending. And of course, the Eagles at the Bengals, they love, because I think really it's just the Eagle. Everybody loves to put the Eagles in anything, and Joe Burrow coming back and things like that. All right, when we come back, we'll give you our Jaguars game that we're most looking forward to watching this upcoming season. You are listening to Helmets and Heels on a Big Chief Tire Monday on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
It's a Helmets and Heels Big Chief Tire Monday. Helmets and Heels is switched on by
First Coast Lighting and Fans.
Upscale lighting, fans, and home decor on 1010XL.
Taylor Dalmio, Brian RJ Saunders, I am Lauren Brooks with you on this Big Chief Tire Monday. All right, the Jaguars game I am most looking forward to watching in the 2024 season. And it's very similar to kind of the list we just went over. The Jaguars at the Eagles. And that would, of course, be Doug Peterson returning to the stadium where he won a Super Bowl. Well, he didn't win it in that stadium, but you know what I mean. He coached for the Philadelphia Eagles, won the Super Bowl with Nick Foles as the quarterback. And now, of course, as the Jaguars head coach. And so, yeah, I like Doug Peterson's return to Philadelphia. They are going to boo him probably a little, cheer for him a little, because those fans are crazy.
Point of clarification, since I've seen some of you who have texted or commented on the MyBookie Digital Studio chat line asking, the schedule has not been released yet.
No.
And by the way, as we were discussing,
we're waiting, in our
1010XL promo meeting this morning, we were discussing at length the cryptic video, did you see, Lauren, that was released last week of the NFL saying the schedule will be released sometime in May, but could not give a date.
Yes, they said soon, for sure.
So there's some indication.
We all think it's Thursday, though.
We think it will be this Thursday, but at this point in time, no one really knows. So, and by the way, in a typical year, we would also know some primetime games. They would have released them on Good Morning Football, which is currently
usually
on hiatus.
European games.
The European games would have been released this morning or tomorrow. Because there's no Good Morning Football right now, like we are as in the dark as y'all are.
Yeah.
So
and really all the foreign games, because now you've got Mexico, right, as well,
in Brazil.
Addition to, in Brazil, in addition to Germany and, of course, England and things like that.
We'll let them know. We'll do it. We will do the schedule release on our show if they would like to.
We're more than happy to. But, yeah, so right now we are just looking at – we looked at the NFL and their – because we know opponents, right?
Yeah.
So the NFL went through, in case you're just joining us, and they went through and they did their top matchups. Now we transition to what Jaguars matchup we are most excited for, which for me is the Houston Texans, because I am just sick and tired of – everyone acting like they're the boogeyman. Did y'all forget you split with them last year, Jacksonville? Like, I understand they have CJ Stroud. I understand he's ascending. I understand they had a great offseason. They go out, they signed Danielle Hunter. They go out, they trade for Stephon Diggs. You did beat them once upon a time. And as Doug Peterson noted, if his team didn't sleepwalk through the first half and show up as if it was they were playing the JV roster, you could have won that game, too. Mm-hmm. And so I just want to get past this. They are the boogeyman. It's a good thing.
The game here was just so bad.
Correct.
Yeah. And that's what people, I think, they forget kind of about the Matt Amendola missed field goal. They just
remember.
Right,
because it was miserable.
Right. They just remember how awful it was. And that's when I, unbeknownst to me, but had a ruptured appendix. Okay. So
yes.
I was watching that game, that Jaguars-Texans game, in a lot of pain. Yeah.
Which is why, another reason, Lauren, we need to get past this. We need to
correct.
Just beat the Jags just need to beat the Texans.
That's
we can
right.
move on. And
yeah.
look, it's okay if they split. It's a rivalry. It's a divisional game. Like, that's okay. But can we just, like, get past this, like, oh, my God, they're the boogeyman. So that's
You're
why the Texans.
Talking about the one here or the one there?
Both. I don't care. I just need the game to happen. So yeah. And I need it to be competitive. And look, even if the Jags lose on a last-second field goal, the fact that it's competitive, and then if they turn around and they win the next one, like, I need that to happen, because I am just tired of hearing that the Texans are this indomitable force.
I am tired of that, too, but they did have a really good offseason after a really good like, season.
But hey, you heard Trevor Sikkema. He thought he had, you know, I mean, and if you go back, and again, our thanks to Trevor from PFF for joining us in the 12 o'clock hour earlier in the program, you can go back and listen on demand. But, you know, on the NFL Stock Exchange, he and Connor both gave them the worst ranking, the worst grade of any AFC South team from their draft. Mm-hmm. And that's because they have questions about Kamari Lassiter. They have questions, much like many people out in Houston, about not drafting players that can help you right now. So, yeah, number one, go back and listen to that. And number two, I just think we need to remember that Nick Caserio was 0 for 2 in his first two NFL drafts as the general manager of the Houston Texans. Hit 1,000. Last offseason, both in the draft and free agency. Free agency looked great this year. Time will tell exactly what this draft class holds for them and what the 2024 season and a first-place schedule holds for the Texans.
We've got Brian Fisher of Fox Sports awaiting on the other side. But, Taylor, what is your game?
Yeah, there's so many fun storylines. I'm not going to say the Bears, because that game, I hate when the Jags-Bears play each other. It stresses me out. But I think that the other NFC North games are fun for me, just because there's like a little extra that I want to win those
right.
wins, obviously. All of the AFC South, but I think my mind originally went to Houston just because of, I feel like we've gotten that kind of fieriness of CJ Stroud lately, and fans are really starting to dislike CJ Stroud here in Jacksonville. And so to me, that adds a whole another layer to that rivalry and wanting to beat them. But there's so many, I mean, Jordan Love's going to come here, obviously, I want to see that, mm-hmm. but Aaron Rodgers, and you're going to get to see Gardner Minshew maybe with the Raiders, and you'll get to see the Bills coming here, and now you have their wide receiver. So there's so many ways you can go, but I think I'm going to have to say maybe I think I'll have to say Green Bay, just because yeah. I just want to beat them so badly here.
And I think the conversation, and the Athletic Football Show had this last week, of Jordan Love, Trevor Lawrence, mm-hmm. and obviously Tua Tagovailoa as well, but those are the next three quarterbacks to potentially get paid,
mm-hmm.
and how one gets paid could affect how the other gets paid.
Yes, definitely.
Our next guest also had a tweet like Trevor Sikkema did that will make Jaguars fans excited. Brian Fisher from Fox Sports will join us next on a Big Chief Tire Monday on 1010 XL 92.5 FM.
Helmets and heels.
It's a Big Chief Tire Monday. The local Jacksonville shop for fair prices and service you can trust. Let's ring up another guest on the All-Pro Roofing phone line.
Light up your lunch with Helmets and Heels.
Presented by First Coast Lighting and Fans.
On 1010 XL.
Welcome back to Helmets and Heels. Brian Fisher joins us now, national college football writer for Fox Sports. All right, Brian, by the way, this is Chris Stapleton, a little song called Arkansas. Chris Stapleton, George Strait play this upcoming weekend. So for everybody going to that concert, enjoy a little Chris Stapleton. But Brian, let's start with the Jaguars. Thanks so much for joining us.
Absolutely. Good to be on with you.
So you tweeted this out about Jaguars new receiver Brian Thomas. You wouldn't be shocked if Brian Thomas Jr. has a better career than his teammate drafted at number 6, Malik Nabers. obviously music to Jags fans' ears. Tell us more about that.
Well, a lot of it's, you know, just kind of down to the situation that he lands. Obviously, he's playing for a coach that I think can kind of maximize what he's able to do with football early on in his career. Obviously, a better quarterbacking situation. I mean, that's a lot of going to it, too. I mean, you got Trevor Lawrence throwing to yourself versus, you know, somebody like, Daniel Jones. I mean, that's just a massive upgrade. I think, obviously, the way that the Jaguars need kind of that field stretcher is going to play into a role where, you know, it can really kind of suit what he does. And not only does he, stretch the field with that speed. I think he, you know, ran 4.3 at the combine, obviously has everything that you kind of check off your boxes. But, you know, his size really can give defensive backs a lot of problems. And I think when you're talking about going down into that red zone, having that target for Trevor Lawrence to throw to is certainly going to make him a fan favorite and certainly able to kind of have that foray as early on as a rookie. And then I think early on in his career as well. Down there in Jacksonville.
You can find Brian on X, Twitter, whatever you are calling it these days, at Brian, that's B-R-Y-A-N-D, Fisher, F-I-S-C-H-E-R, on, again, X, Twitter, whatever your preference may be. Brian, we do want to get more into some national college football headlines as we look to the spring practices wrapping up around the country, the offseason, and, of course, the fall season that is upcoming. But before we do so, one more on the Jags. I'm curious, Mason Smith, Jordan Jefferson, Brian Thomas Jr., all coming to Jacksonville from LSU, which has been quite the talking point in these parts, especially knowing how porous LSU's defense was at times last year, which, by the way, their defense coordinator last year, also in Jacksonville, and Matt Howes. What do you make of LSU's deficiencies on defense last year that maybe gives Jaguar fans hope that these players should not be defined by the overall collective and the results from a year ago in Baton Rouge?
Yeah, you know, it's definitely, you know, that was one of the things that definitely plagued LSU is just they got into a lot of shootouts. And, you know, frankly, I mean, look, it's not like they were, drafting the back half of the defense, which I think, you know, really struggled. They dealt with a lot of injuries. I mean, they're throwing a lot of freshmen, young guys out there due to injuries, you know, last year. And I think that really impacted LSU's defensive statistics. And, it wasn't great by any stretch of the imagination, but I think in the guys that they got, I mean, I thought, you know, Mason Smith was a steal in round two. You know, you talk about the upside of him, the flashes that you saw out of him, not just last year, but really over the course of his career. I thought that was a very solid pick in round two, really good value, especially later in the draft. And I mean, that's the thing that you got to separate, you know, whether you're a scout, whether you're front office, it doesn't matter. It's separating kind of the overall performance of a unit versus how much can that guy do for us? You know, what does he bring to the table? And I think in the guys that they got, that's really what, I think the Jaguars got out of their draft class was guys that can add to what they're doing defensively. Obviously, you're surrounding them with, you know, some pretty good high picks, in the past that have flashed as well on that defense moving forward. And I think that's, reason for optimism down there in Duval.
Brian, let's take a look at college football. I saw one of your tweets, too, when you were talking about kind of the lack of star power when it comes to this upcoming football season. And we're talking about, I guess, the names we're mainly addressing in a Carson Beck, which we love because he's from here, from Jacksonville, Florida. But yours, Dylan Gabriel, some of the names. And it doesn't seem like it's the same as previous years. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, you know, it's definitely interesting, too, especially given that the NCAA video game is coming back. You know, there's a lot of talk about, you know, who might grace the cover. And, you know, certainly a year ago, it was very easy to kind of point to, hey, you know, here's Caleb Williams, here's Drake May, and, you know, here's a Jaden Daniels. And certainly those guys, you know, kind of proved it not only last year, but, a couple weeks ago during the draft. And they were stars, you know, and we really don't have that, I think, this year in college football. I guess just based on kind of what happened in the past. Now, part of that was they were, you know, this coming crop of 2025 guys was overshadowed, you know, by all the talk with Caleb Williams. Mm-hmm. There was not kind of the breakout stars, you know, maybe outside of kind of Travis Hunter at Colorado. You know, I think, he really burst on the scene. Shutter Sanders, certainly. Those are probably the most marketable and most well-known, you know, in terms of the broad audience of college football names. But, honestly, it's going to kind of be pretty wide open, I think, coming into the year. You throw in the fact that there's going to be kind of that 12-team playoff that, really can make stars out of guys later in the year, later in the postseason. I think it's going to be just a fascinating time, you know, for college football because there's not just kind of that one guy that you can kind of point to. A lot of really, really good guys, especially defensively, which I think, you know, kind of clouds things up. You know, there's no star quarterback. There's no, you know, top wide receiver necessarily that you're going to instantly. You know, there's a lot of defensive guys out there, and you know, they're just not quite as marketable, you know, certainly as some of their offensive counterparts. So that's part of it, but it does make for, you know, you throw in the realignment, you throw in everything that's going on. This is really a very intriguing 2025 season, and I certainly can't wait to see how it plays out.
And one game in particular that's very intriguing around these parts, Florida-Miami, to kick off the season. Who has more to lose, Billy Napier or Mario Cristobal?
Oh, that's a good question. And I mean, like the angst going into that game and coming out of it, you know, early in the year is going to be off the charts for both fan bases. You know, I think, you know, certainly there's been plenty of hot seat talk, you know, surrounding Billy Napier. And I would imagine that's only going to fuel the fire if they end up losing it, or maybe cool it down just a tad if they win it. But, you know, look, for Mario Cristobal in Miami, you look at what they've done in the portal, especially recently, the last couple of weeks. I mean, you can tell that this is a Miami program that is going for it. And certainly the roster upgrades have been notable. You know, it just kind of comes down to can they make hay, you know, during the season and actually during those games. You know, it kind of felt like a very disjointed team, you know, last year, especially through some of those losses. And that's on Mario Cristobal to kind of get everybody pulling in the same direction. I think the coaching upgrades, I think the player upgrades are going to go a long way to making them one of the contenders in the ACC. You certainly have, you know, Florida State probably taking a step back. You have Clemson probably still contending for the conference crown. You know, there's a lot of teams. It's really an ACC in flux. And Miami, I think, probably has more to lose because they're kind of viewed at nationally as one of those teams that can not only be in the top 25 consistently next year, but, you know, I think with what they've brought in through the portal, they really have an opportunity to make a run for the ACC title. And you know what? If you win the ACC, chances are you're probably one of those top four seeds in the college football playoff this year.
Brian Fisher of Fox Sports joining us on the All-Pro Roofing Hotline. A couple more for Brian before we turn him loose right here on Helmets and Heels. Brian, I know we want to get to some of the bigger, broader topics, whether that's the demise of the Pac-12, which we will have a requiem for here shortly, the two-pack, if you may, as well as Deion Sanders' comments last week. But real quick on Florida, it's been fascinating over the last week or so here at 1010XL. We've had multiple national writers, commentators on, and the view of the Gators and what their 2024 season could hold has been as polarizing a conversation as any. What do you make of having the most difficult schedule that many people believe has ever been constructed in college football, combined with Billy Napier potentially, or perhaps in reality, on the hot seat?
Yeah, you know, you look at the schedule and just all the names, and you just keep adding them up. And yeah, I think that's probably, I would say, like 60% of the reason why there's a lot of doubt, you know, surrounding the Gators. You know, obviously, you know, just the way things ended last year and just the general tenure that Billy Napier has kind of put together. It's been so kind of up and down. You've seen flashes, certainly, of things kind of coalescing. But, you know, it's going to be a fascinating year, too. I think you can throw the quarterback battle in there, too, you know, in terms of how long is that leash for Graham Mertz, you know, going forward, given the DJ Lagway behind him and all that, you know, the flashes we saw certainly during the spring out of his arm and what he can do. You know, maybe that's a cause for optimism, but I think the schedule definitely kind of lowers the ceiling significantly. I do think the product, you know, on the field is going to be better. I mean, you look at last year, just all the special teams mistakes, you know, the offensive line didn't think played, you know, particularly well. I think they can be better in those two areas in particular. So you add it all up, you could be a better team with kind of the same or maybe even slightly better record, and that might give cause for hope moving forward. But at the end of the day, it is just such a tough schedule. And, you know, frankly, it is an SEC that, you know, you kind of got to punch above your weight if, you know, with the additions of Texas and Oklahoma, you know, to be above that midpoint, you got to be a very good football team. And, you know, I think the questions are going to be abound, not only early in the year, but I think throughout 2024, moving into 2025, whether Billy Napier is going to be the guy to consistently deliver on some of those promises.
Brian, when we look at this NFL draft that just passed, 14 straight offensive players started off being selected in that draft, including six quarterbacks. Then we saw a couple later with Spencer Rattler and Jordan Travis. Which team do you think would be most affected by one of those quarterbacks or one of those receiving weapons departing?
Well, I think it's hard to look beyond, you know, the top draft pick in terms of Caleb Williams departing from USC. And, you know, just the load that he shouldered last year was probably greater than any of those guys. You know, even for all the numbers that Jaden Daniels put up at LSU, you know, I think, you know, you're throwing to a lot of first round wide receivers. You know, Caleb Williams didn't really have that help. You know, there was a lot of him running around, scrambling, trying to make plays. And so as USC transitions into the Big Ten, you know, I think there's going to be a lot of questions in terms of, you know, they have two quarterbacks there. Certainly Miller Moss was the hero there from the bowl game that, you know, really made some waves for USC. Looks like he might be the guy, you know, going into the start of the season. But, you know, there's some depth there. Lincoln Riley certainly known for developing quarterbacks. And, you know, the question remains, you know, how big of that drop-off is there going to be? Now, Lincoln Riley's proven in the past that, you know, that he can have a new guy come in and take the reins and not really miss a beat. But moving into conference, a different conference, obviously much more emphasis in terms of being physical in the trenches. That was an area where USC really struggled last year. So, you know, it makes for a fascinating kind of look at 2024 for the Trojans and where they're going to go from here. But, you know, really North Carolina, you know, they feel pretty confident about where they're moving forward more in terms of progress as a team. And, you know, I think LSU is kind of the same boat, but it's going to be interesting too, because you look at all those offensive names that did go early in the draft this year. And, you know, if you look ahead towards 2025, it's kind of flipped. You know, a lot of the guys that, you know, are coming back were either underclassmen or now draft eligible were on the defensive side of the ball. So it could be a complete opposite flip come 2025 draft, where you got a lot of those defensive guys that end up going early in the draft. And I think there's a host of guys that are going to be in contention for that top pick on that side of the ball.
I want to go back to something you said, Brian, about Florida State. They could potentially take a step back. DJ Uiagalelei, now the helm of the FSU offense. What do you think about him as far as, obviously, didn't have a great spring game, but we've seen a lot of him over the years.
Well, he's a high floor guy. You know, and I think that's, you know, certainly, you know, moving on from Jordan Travis and all the other weapons that he had offensively for Mike Norvell, that's going to be a huge plus. You know, he just kind of gives you a level of familiarity at the quarterback position that you can count on. And I think that's going to be key for FSU, especially navigating that schedule like they have in front of them. And, you know, frankly, you saw some glimpses of progress, you know, last year at Oregon State from him. You know, he you know, those really intermediate routes, you know, I thought he improved on quite a bit. He was still not as consistent as I think you would want of him to be, especially playing behind a pretty good offensive line there at Oregon State, playing, having some weapons on the outside that he could get the ball to. And, you know, frankly, you know, he's going to have to take another step at FSU if he wants to really kind of be considered, you know, draft eligible and that draftable material. It's going to be on him to make that leap. But at the same time, you know, he's just that consistent presence. He's been around the ACC. He knows what it's like to play in those big games in that conference. And I think that more than anything is a very good stabilizing factor, especially given the roster turnover that Mike Norvell's, you know, kind of looking at, given all those draft picks that were taken pretty high in the draft.
If I could take our listeners behind the curtain a minute here as we get ready to wrap with Brian Fisher of Fox Sports. Part of how we came to have you on today, Brian, was following the comments of Deion Sanders last week. And, of course, his son Shador and several Colorado players that swept Twitter, social media by storm. How long is Deion Sanders made for Colorado and college football, in your opinion?
That's a million-dollar question that I think is already being asked by a lot of folks, you know, around the sport. You know, there's been certainly, you know, some increased talk, just the way that he's kind of building those rosters up there in Boulder, that, you know, it kind of looks like by shying away a little bit from the high school talent, you know, maybe this is a guy that is going to move on, you know, after his sons certainly depart after this year. You know, both of, you know, Shador and Shiloh are both going to be draft eligible. He's kind of mentioned publicly that both of those guys are going to go into the draft, you know, after this upcoming season. And, you know, that would make a nice clean break. And certainly, you know, he's brought a lot of, you know, benefits to what Colorado has, especially given the program that he's taken over. But it's just such a transient program that it remains one of the most fascinating stories in all of college football in terms of what he can do for this upcoming season and what is ultimately going to happen to him moving forward. I mean, there's already been plenty of rumors and debate, you know, on talk shows across the country about him moving on to an NFL job if both his sons end up declaring for the draft, and maybe there's sort of some sort of package deal. And you can certainly hear all that talk. You know, he's been pretty insistent that he wants to remain at Colorado, but you know, until 2025 rolls around and he's still the Buffs head coach, I think there's going to be, you know, a healthy dose of skepticism, you know, surrounding ultimately what his project is there in Boulder and ultimately what he wants to do moving forward, because it certainly looks like a situation where he could leave it pretty easily after this upcoming year. And he could also come back and continue to rebuild it year by year, as he's continued to do through the transfer portal, shying away from that high school talent. But, you know, it's one of the great mysteries in the sport, and I think one of the more intriguing teams in the country in college football moving forward.
Yeah, certainly it'll be a fun story to follow. All right, Brian, we really appreciate your time today. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. Good to be on with you.
All right, there he goes, Brian Fisher, national college football writer for Fox Sports. And look, yeah, the Deion thing, unless you're a Colorado fan, it's just fun to sit back and watch the drama unfold, and it doesn't affect you. If you work for the University of Colorado, you are loving what's happening there.
Are you?
Well, initially, you have season tickets sold out. They've never had that before. Or
people talking about
time.
Your program. I mean, we always talk about, you know, any publicity is good.
Right.
Publicity, whatever. And I guess like at a certain point, it'll start affecting negatively, because people are already talking about Shadur and how it's going to affect his draft stock next year. So when does that start coming into play, rather than like, we have season tickets, but everyone hates our entire program and our quarterback that was supposed to go number one is
and our dropping quarterback is out here just like bashing former teammates, bashing kids in the
and
portal.
His dad's
agreeing to it. His other brother is out here like recruiting kids in the portal on his Instagram story. Look, it's a very fascinating situation. And don't forget, and our thanks again to Brian for joining us as we looked at some big national college football storylines. Of course, the season's still a few months out, but don't forget, Colorado is also going to be transitioning back to the Big 12, as are Utah, you know, obviously Texas and Oklahoma going to the SEC, the two-pack, like I said, RIP to the Pac-12, despite putting so many players, you know, on NFL rosters through the NFL draft a week and a half ago. So it's a fascinating time in college football because of all of those factors. Mm-hmm. And then you factor in Deion just unhinged and unfiltered online.
And it's so interesting to me, too, because I saw that tweet about him talking about the star power, and I really started thinking about it and how much, when we're talking about this next season, are we talking less players and more coaches? Saban gone, Harbaugh gone, Napier on the hot seat, Cristobal on the hot seat. Like all of, I feel like we've talked so much more about college football coaches leading into the season than we are particular players.
Well, and the tweet that Brian sent, I believe it was last week that you're referring to, he said it's almost by default that Carson Beck is just the name that everyone knows. Yeah. It's like him and Quinn Ewers, and who else is there?
Maybe transfer Dylan Gabriel. Like maybe.
And Shador and Shador, Travis Hunter. Like, that's it. Like, that's literally it right now, is those four.
Yep.
Which is where I look at the fallout from this past college basketball season, and for what it's worth, the last five since Zion Williamson left for the NBA. Mm-hmm. And could we see a similar situation in college football? I don't think so, because the viewership numbers will always be there.
Yeah.
But you can't help but ask, like, where are the stars? We see how it has negatively impacted men's college basketball, whereas for women's college basketball, having stars helps and elevates it. And you could say the same for college football, going back to, you know, the Caleb Williams, the Trevor Lawrences, the Jalen Hurts. When there is a star, more people will gravitate naturally to it, in addition to the casual sports college football fan.
Yeah, I mean, I think people are forgetting probably about some of the quarterbacks that are returning. Like, for instance, Jalen Milroe, because like you said, we were talking about the fact that Nick Saban's no longer at Alabama, Kalen DeBoer in from Washington. Jalen Milroe returns. Like, he had a really good season. That team went to the Final Four last year. Yes, they did have a lot of talent depart, and a lot of them went down the road to Tallahassee. But overall, Jalen Milroe is still a really good quarterback. Jackson Dart at Ole Miss, still a really good quarterback in Lane Kiffin's offense, which is super explosive, and they did add in the transfer portal, probably more additions than subtractions for Ole Miss. And you've got, like you mentioned, Dylan Gabriel, or like Brian mentioned, Dylan Gabriel now at Oregon. Like, that's a guy who I feel like has been in college football for so many years now. I think he started at UCF and then he went to Oklahoma and now he's at Oregon. Like, that's a similar to DJ Uiagalelei starting at Clemson, then going to Oregon State, and then now at FSU. Like, some of these guys, it does feel like they've been in college football forever. But I think the key difference between men's basketball and college football, as far as stars are concerned, is the moment the games begin, then people will be talking all about them. With college basketball, especially men's college basketball, because it starts during college football season, the moment that the games begin and people are playing super well, no one's really paying that close of attention.
Yeah, and I think when we're talking about the quarterbacks, because obviously when we're talking about Trevor Lawrence and when we're talking about Caleb, people talk about these guys since they're in high school too. So the quarterbacks we're talking about right now, most of them more so like Milroe last year had a good season, but you weren't talking much about him before last year. It was kind of like, what is Alabama going to do next? They'll figure it out because they always do, but it wasn't like, can't wait to see Jalen Milroe next year. So I think that's the difference, is like there was so many years of these quarterbacks that we had been talked about since they were 14 years old, and we just haven't had that, at least coming into this season.
Yeah, other than Carson Beck, who's certainly around
here.
We talk about, but is everybody else?
I don't know.
Right. We didn't get a chance to ask Brian, but, you know, is Georgia back to being the big bad wolf because Nick Saban is out of Alabama? Or do you say, with the players that Kalen DeBoer has brought in, knowing Kalen DeBoer coached Washington to a national championship game, it's still Alabama at the top of the mountain?
I would say it's Georgia and Texas that people will have, because obviously Texas also made the college football playoff. And then there's the questions about Alabama, but a lot of people want to put Ole Miss up there. Mm-hmm. We talked to Alyssa Lang about this last week. People are, you know, still interested and intrigued by LSU and what they can do, but they certainly lost a lot of talent to the NFL draft. A lot of those players here in Jacksonville. All right, we will head up to Nashville as our tour around the AFC South will conclude. We're going to talk to John Burton on the Tennessee Titans on a Big Chief Tire Monday on 10 to XL 92.5 FM.
It's a Big Chief Tire Monday on Helmets and Heels. This hour of Helmets and Heels is brought to you by First Coast Honda Dealers. Let's ring up another guest on the All-Pro Roofing phone line.
Helmets and Heels.
Presented by First Coast Lighting and Fans.
On 1010 XL.
We continue our tour around the AFC South, seeing how our contemporaries in Indianapolis, Houston, and now Nashville are feeling, as well as the fan base in each of those respective fan bases, or cities, excuse me, are feeling after the 2024 NFL Draft. Joining us now by way of Nashville is John Burton. He is a sports anchor reporter at News Channel 5. You can also catch him on Nashville Sports Radio, 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. Central Time. He also tells me he is finishing an egg white omelet right now. And what better way to kick off a Monday than saying hello and an egg white omelet with John Burton. How are you, my friend?
Oh, Mia, I'll tell you what, the omelet was absolutely delicious. A little vegan cheese, a little sausage, some gluten-free toast to go with that. I'm feeling like a new man, ready to rock and roll. So thanks for having me on. And if you don't mind, I'd like to start. Do we have a medical update on Tony Khan? I'm a big wrestling fan, former professional wrestler. He was done dirty by the Young Bucks and by Jack Perry. Is he okay? How is Tony Khan, ladies?
It's funny you say that, John, because we actually did a poll last week of what position group you're most worried about. And we had a listener submit ownership. And, of course, we're like, why would you be worried? And they go, because we're very worried about Tony and his neck brace and if the injury is going to affect him at all moving forward. As far as I know, he will rise like a phoenix through the ashes, and he will be just fine and make an appearance on AEW coming up, from what I have been told. So no exact timeline, though. What I do know is we also don't have a timeline, but we at the very least know what we know as far as Zay Jones visiting the Tennessee Titans today. And so before we get to reviewing the Tennessee Titans draft haul, John, let's begin with that news this morning. Again, another familiar face for new offensive coordinator Nick Holes. Do you see a world in which the Titans have the room in their wide receiver room to add Zay into the fold as well?
Well, I think they have the room to add somebody, Mia, because on Friday they entertained Tyler Boyd, and now they're talking to Zay Jones. So obviously that tells me a couple things. You know, they're looking for some quickness out of the slot receiver position, and Kyle Phillips has kind of been that guy over the last couple of years, but he has not been able to stay healthy. And, you know, the guy that they drafted in the first round a couple of years ago, Treylon Burks, he has not been available, mostly due to injury. And when he has been available, he hasn't been all that productive. So it is clear to me that Rand Carthon and Brian Callahan and Nick Holtz are looking for more veterans to bolster up the wide receiving room and obviously give more targets to Will Levis, their young quarterback entering his second season. And so it's obvious that they're actively shopping for a veteran wide receiver to come in. And I don't know what that means for Phillips or Burks, but you know, it's probably not a good thing if you know, because think about it, these guys are going to be playing for a regime that didn't draft them or coach them. So obviously they're looking for more help in the wide receiver room, I would say Zay Jones would be, or Tyler Boyd would be, more of a luxury than a necessity. But it's kind of both when you think about it, given the uncertainty about Kyle Phillips and Treylon Burks.
Now, John, when you're looking at Will Levis, because last season, obviously, we saw him a little bit later in the season, 9 starts, 8 touchdowns in that 9 starts. What are the expectations around him and kind of the step he is expecting to make this season?
Well, that's a great question, right? There are a lot of unknowns out there because he's got to learn a new offense. He doesn't have a lot of time to learn it. You know, he's got to learn Brian Callahan and Nick Holtz's offense. Now, Callahan during the offseason, you know, said all the right things. I really like Will. I'm going to work with him. We're going to, you know, put him in a position to succeed, et cetera, et cetera. But at the end of the day, it's going to be up to Will to learn this offense, master it, and, you know, be able to convey what he's being coached on the field with the 11 other guys around him. So there's a lot of optimism about Will Levis, given the way he played last year. You know, his debut was sparkling, you know, had the 4 touchdown passes against the Falcons, and of course led that comeback on the, in the Monday night game against the Dolphins late in the season. So, you know, his arm, the physical attributes are there, right? He's got the arm, he's got the mobility. And what's really surprised me about him is his demeanor was way different than what I thought it was going to be. I thought he was going to be, you know, kind of a Baker Mayfield, you know, chip on my shoulder, rebel without a clue type guy. I should have been drafted in the first round. What am I doing going in the second round? That has not been the case. He has been the consummate teammate, the leader. You know, from what I understand, he's been here all off season, and he's the guy that called every draft pick the minute they were selected and welcomed them to the team. So he's showing a lot of leadership, and so it's got to show up on the field. But I would say the arrow is pointing up on Will Levis right now, and the expectations would be to build on what he did last year.
One of the guys they added in the draft to help protect Levis would be J.C. Latham out of Alabama. So, John, when that name was called on Thursday night, the first round of the NFL draft, were you surprised? Did you think the Titans would go in that direction or a different one?
Well, once Joe Alt came off the board at 5 to the Chargers, I thought maybe the Titans might entertain trading back and accumulating more picks. But when Latham's name was called, I was mildly surprised, mostly because, as we all know, he played right tackle in college at Alabama. He's going to be asked to be the left tackle here in Nashville with the Titans. And, you know, I know he played left tackle in high school at MSG, because I'm a Ranger and Knicks fan. Sorry. Freudian slip. You know, he played at IMG down there in Florida, you know, not far where you guys are at right now. And I look at it as, you know, Brian Callahan is the head coach, but Bill Callahan is his offensive coordinator and his dad, and he's a legendary offensive line coach, I should say. And I'm sure he was consulted. I'm sure the questions were asked, hey, coach, can this guy come in and play left tackle for us? And if Bill Callahan said, yep, don't worry, bring him in, I'll coach him up, we're good to go, that's good enough for me. That wasn't good enough for a lot of Titans fans who are a little bit, you know, there's some trepidation about this pick, but, you know, I got to trust what Bill Callahan thinks and says in this situation. So a mild surprise. I was expecting Alt to be there and to get picked by the Titans, but obviously that didn't happen. And, you know, the Titans pivoted, and they feel like they've got a really, really good young offensive lineman to man that left tackle spot for the next decade or so, kind of like Taylor Lewan did. So that's the hope anyway.
Okay, so brief story time. John's Twitter account got hacked last year, so you can now find him on X at John, J-O-N, Burton, 3234, if you are interested in following for the very latest on what those hated Titans are up to in Nashville. The Titans then double-dipped in the trenches, John, two weeks ago in the NFL draft, as they do go to Vondre Sweat, defensive tackle out of Texas, in the second round, much to the surprise of many analysts and many people in the industry who thought that DUI that he unfortunately was charged with earlier in the month of April would cause him to fall to day 3. What do you make of the Titans' rationale, yes, for selecting Sweat, but also that they feel they did enough intel and that they feel good about the pick?
Great question, Mia. Well, first of all, listen, Jeffrey Simmons needs help along that defensive line, right? Danico Autry, who was kind of the Robin to his Batman, is gone. He's in Houston now. So that defensive line is a little thin for the Tennessee Titans. So picking him. In fact, Jeffrey Simmons was so excited once the pick was made, he immediately texted GM Rand Carthon and told him thank you for giving him some help along that defensive line. So I felt like the need for that position, where they were, his production at Texas, and Rand Carthon said, we did our due diligence, we investigated the DUI, and we were satisfied with the answers that we got. He didn't reveal what the answers were, obviously, but they feel good about the pick and where he's at. So they don't anticipate any further character issues. So it was a combination of he was available, it's a definite need for the Titans, you know, because Jeffrey Simmons, as you guys know, receives so many double and triple teams, and for good reason. He's, I guess you could say maybe perhaps the best interior defensive lineman in all of football now that Aaron Donald's retired. You know, it's debatable, but, you know, he can't do it alone and he needs help, and he can't help you if he's getting triple teamed all the time. You bring in Tavondre Sweat, a huge man, and, you know, weight maintenance is going to be an issue for him going forward. That much we know, but he's going to be able to occupy blockers, get a good push in the interior, stop the run, occasionally get after the quarterback, and maybe most importantly, allow Jeffrey Simmons to do more with less blockers he has to deal with. So they feel good about the pick. They feel good about, you know, the due diligence they put in to investigate the DUI and any other character issues he may have. And, you know, they decide to go with him in round two.
Those were the top two picks. Real quick, before we let you go on the All-Pro Roofing Hotline, John, was there maybe another real sneaky pick that you felt the Titans made that Jaguar fans maybe should keep on their radar?
I like who they took in round four, Cedric Gray, the linebacker out of North Carolina, a real sideline-to-sideline guy, had 121 tackles last year for the Tar Heels, 266 over the last 2 years. He also is very aggressive on special teams and really potent on special teams as well. And this could be a day one starter for them. And they're talking about him also being the green dot guy. So I really like Cedric Gray. I expect him to make an impact in the first year with the Titans.
The Titans with a emphasis on getting tougher through the NFL draft. Again, he is John Burton, News Channel 5, Nashville Sports Radio. You can find him at JohnBurton3234. And thank you for joining us, sir. Your maiden voyage, I believe, at least on this iteration of Helmets and Heels. And, of course, on the All-Pro Roofing Hotline.
Always a pleasure, ladies. Have me on anytime. And Tony, get well, my man.
Hey, listen, he does listen to 1010, so hopefully Tony heard that as he's driving around or listening on the app like so many of you. And yes, John is a big professional wrestling guy. He also is a certified fitness coach. So if you follow him on any of those social channels, you might pick up some helpful tips, too, if you're on your way on a fitness journey.
All right, we've got Jaguars rookie jersey numbers for you next on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
It's a Big Chief Tire Monday, the local Jacksonville shop for fair prices and service you can trust.
Helmets and Heels.
This hour is brought to you by First Coast Honda Dealers.
This is Helmets and Heels.
Kept classy by First Coast Lighting and Fans. Upscale lighting, fans, and home decor.
On 1010XL.
One segment to go before we turn it over to XL Primetime. We've got some rookie jersey numbers. Ryan Thomas Jr. will wear number 7. He wore 11 at LSU. That means that Parker Washington keeps the number 11 jersey.
Yeah, and shout out to Trevorville, yes, yep. On Twitter, yep. For reminding us that, of course, Brian Thomas Jr. previously in college wore 11, which means he's getting 7 after being 11, 7-11. Always open, but bang, love
hey,
that.
I love it. Yeah, would love that if he gets a ton of separation. Jarian Jones, the corner, will be number 22. DeAndre Prince, another corner, will be 24. Keelan Robinson will wear 31, the, of course, special teams running back, which is always weird now saying that, special teams running back. Cam Little, the kicker, will wear 39. Dylan Cole will wear 59. Javon Foster, 62. Mason Smith will wear 94, meaning he's taking over Dwan Smoot's number. And Jordan Jefferson will wear 98. Any of those stand out to you besides Brian Thomas Jr.?
For me, the kicker's wearing in the 30s because mm-hmm. Riley Patterson, I believe, is also wearing 38 mm-hmm. now. That's fascinating to me. Maybe that's a shift once one of them wins the job that they go to a single digit. But that one's interesting to me. And, I thought Mason Smith was 91. It was going to hurt me because I do miss Dwan Smoot. As much as we wish him well up in Buffalo where he just signed with Buffalo Bills, instead Mason Smith takes Foley Fadukasi's number. And I like that for Mason Smith. And he noted to us in his post-draft availability that despite wearing 0 mm-hmm. at the college level at LSU the last few years, he did make the decision – before they even approached him about what number he would want to be with the Jacksonville Jaguars, that he wanted to go back to his high school number.
Yeah, makes sense. In baseball, FSU is now ranked 8th in the country, so they fell one spot. They're now 35-10 after they split with 23rd ranked NC State over the weekend. They lost on Friday 8-7. They won yesterday 8-1. Saturday night's game was canceled due to weather. That also happened in the UNF-Kennesaw State matchup on Saturday. So FSU, as far as local baseball fans are concerned, FSU plays host to JU tomorrow night. First pitch, 6 o'clock. Florida lost 2 out of 3 to now number 1 ranked Tennessee. And Florida finally won a game, though, on Saturday where they never trailed against the Tennessee opponents. That was the first time all season Florida won a game and they didn't trail at all. Florida gave up 11 runs in the 6th inning Saturday night in that loss. By the way, Cags did finally suffer a loss as a pitcher, so he's 5-1 now on the mound, but he does have 26 home runs. But this stat, I thought y'all, as far as especially the Florida baseball fans that are not happy right now, would not like. Florida has now dropped 5 straight SEC series for the first time in Kevin O'Sullivan's 17-year tenure as head coach. We'll see what happens the rest of the way. Florida is at, to finish the season, at number 15, now ranked 15th Georgia, but they've got Kentucky before that. Florida plays host to USF tomorrow night, first pitch at 6:30. UNF did split with Kennesaw State. UNF is home tomorrow against Florida A&M, first pitch is at 4 o'clock. And as far as JU is concerned, JU had a tough weekend, was swept on the road by FGCU, but like I said, at FSU tomorrow night.
Yeah, that Florida stat's wild.
Yeah.
Still trying to. I mean, he's not on the hot seat.
Yeah. Like, he's not on the hot seat.
He went to the College World Series last year.
He went to the National Championship.
Yeah, the National Championship round of the College World Series.
He's been to the College World Series a lot, and he's not on the hot seat. But you know how Gator Nation is.
Oh, yeah.
Once things don't go the way Florida fans want, then they start to get a little bit vocal on Twitter and certainly message boards, things like that, if those things still exist. But yeah, I mean, I think we'll see what happens. Does Florida make the postseason? I think they will. And then what does Florida do in the postseason? That could also calm them down.
I have a little tidbit that maybe we can talk more about this tomorrow, but it just got posted. And with the rookie numbers also just getting posted, it's fitting. So the 2024 NFL Offensive Rookie of the Year odds to win. Mm-hmm. Brian Thomas Jr. with the 10th best odds right now. Caleb Williams won, Marvin Harrison Jr., Jaden Daniels, J.J. McCarthy, Malik Nabers, Xavier Worthy, Rome Odunze, Drake May, Bo Nix, Brian Thomas Jr.
A lot of quarterbacks.
Wide receivers, running backs have ruled Offensive Rookie of the Year the past 7 out of the last 11 years were one of those positions. Top 10 picks also hold the spotlight. 6 winners drafted there. 8 of 10 hailed from the first round. So interesting. I feel like we could dive into that a little bit tomorrow if we wanted to.
Last week when I was mad on Friday about Brian Thomas Jr. not being a top 10 instant impact rookie, well, that proves it. The odds prove it.
There's also a million quarterbacks ahead of him just because statistical analysis.
Casey Worthy too.
Yes, also Worthy because he plays for the defending Super Bowl champs. Real quick before we go, we love you Orlando Magic fans. Sorry the way it ended, but I think I speak for all of us when I say hope for the future when 4 of your cornerstones are under the age of 25.
Yes. There you have it. All right, that's a wrap for us. Like I said, don't go anywhere. XL Primetime is coming up next. For Mia O'Brien, for Taylor Dahl, for RJ Saunders, I am Lauren Brooks. These heels are made for talking. We will talk to you tomorrow. Are gonna walk all over you.